I was here, I popped a button. So this time I'm just going to steal a mic, I guess. I appreciate everybody being here. I thank you for coming back. If you were here this morning, if you were not here this morning, what we are talking about is this idea of being real Christians. And that's with the understanding that the Bible teaches us that there are people who think they are Christians, who profess to be Christians, but they are not. And we use the illustration of fake money. That it is worthless. Even if you think it's worth something, it is not worth anything. And we don't want to be like this in God's eyes. We want to be the real thing, the substance of what a Christian should be, of what pleases God, of what we ought to be in order to make it to heaven. And so what I'd like to talk about this evening is the idea of being a real disciple of Jesus. And that's an interesting topic because I find that if you've been in the church all of your life, if you grew up going to Bible class, odds are you know what a disciple is in principle. But what I find is when I deal with new Christians, people that haven't been around the Bible all of their lives, and they come to Christ, you don't have to know the whole Bible to come to Christ, and they have all sorts of questions. And one that just keeps coming up is, what is a disciple? They read about it, they don't really understand what it is. And so I want to talk about what a disciple is, and I want us to get to this idea of what a real disciple is. Now, this is an important subject for several reasons, one of which is because it's who we are supposed to be. You know that we talk about, well, we're Christians, and we are, and I don't want to ever undermine that. Do you know how many times the Bible uses the word Christians? Looking to see if anybody's nodding. I don't see any. Good guess down here is one. No, it's three. Three times. We use it constantly, and we should. One of those times makes it very clear that it was a term that was used frequently. But when you want to talk about the weight of a term that is used within Scripture, it's disciple. Hundreds of times in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and Acts, it talks about disciples. Versus the three times about Christians. So what is a disciple? Well, it's an important subject because it's what we are supposed to be accomplishing. In the Great Commission, in Matthew chapter 28, verse 18, Jesus says, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go therefore and make disciples." What is that? And I'll tell you right now, before we get all the way into the lesson, it isn't somebody who will go and sit in the pew with you. That's not a disciple. It's something much deeper and more than that. And when we understand what a disciple is, what we can understand is what these first century Christians were doing and why they were doing it. It all comes down to this concept of being a disciple. Now, simply put, a disciple is somebody who follows a teacher. We oftentimes just say a follower. That's not quite right. It's somebody who follows a teacher. And it's not like what happens at school today. And I fail to realize that I'm old because I talk about today and I still think of my school days. And it's still pretty sure it's still the same. But what happened was I went to school and they gave me a list of classes I was going to and a teacher. And so then I would go and be a disciple in that class. But that's not really the idea we're talking about. It's not where somebody has chosen the teacher for you, but it is where you look out and you recognize this person is of such worth and value. They know what I want to know. They can do what I want to be able to do. They are what I want to be. I will sit at their feet and call them master, call them teacher, and I will learn from them. And that's what it means to be a disciple, to recognize this person is the master of these things. And if I want to achieve this goal, if I want to reach their heights, all I have to do is follow their life. Learn the things they've learned. Do the things that they do. So it's not the same thing as just following somebody. And I can illustrate that through scriptures because not everybody who followed Jesus was a disciple of Jesus. Some followed him without following him. Others followed him and were followers of him. And those are not the same thing, even though it seems like I'm talking in doublespeak. But if you look at Mark chapter 8 and verse 34, says, he summoned the crowd, So this is Jesus talking. He summoned the crowd. So what are they? They have followed him, right? And he just called for them. They just came to him. So they must be disciples. But it says, he summoned the crowd with his disciples and said to them, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. And so here they're following him, but they're not all disciples. Within the group that is following Jesus is the disciples, the ones who are actually following him as their master, as their teacher. Or if you look at Luke chapter 7 in verse 11, the same thing happens once more. Soon afterwards, he went to a city called Nain, and his disciples were going along with him, accompanied by a large crowd. So we have this large crowd. They're following him wherever he's going, but they're not the disciples. And then you have this certain group that is the disciples, and they're the ones who have said, Jesus is the teacher. He is the master, and we've dedicated ourselves to what he has to say. And they are the disciples. And this is not that hard of a concept. You probably can understand this just within this congregation. You are the Edwards Lake Church of Christ, and you are members of this group. But not everybody who walks through that door is a member. Not everybody who walks through that door is a part of this family. You have sometimes the people that are just visitors, but sometimes you have people that are just curious. And they might not even believe in God, but they want to know about you. And so they walk in, and so now they don't believe in God, they don't believe in Jesus, but they're in the same assembly with you. That doesn't make them a part of you. You need to be a member of this congregation. There's more to it than that. Same thing. Everybody who followed Jesus around from city to city to city, they weren't all disciples. Some of them were spies. Some of them were trying to catch him doing something, saying something that they could use against him. So they're following him from city to city, but they're not following him at all. They don't believe in his authority. They don't believe in his nature. They don't believe he's the master. Well, within this congregation, you also have some members who have, through endurance and diligence, have achieved the goal of reaching of meeting certain qualifications, and now they're members of the congregation, but we give them a new role and a new title, and we call them elders, or we call them deacons. So they're still members of the congregation, but they're also elders, they're also deacons. There were amongst all of the disciples, Jesus picked some of them and said some of them will now be apostles. Every apostle was a disciple. Not every disciple was an apostle. You understand? So these were the disciples. Some of the disciples were called apostles. Then in Acts chapter 11 and verse 26, the first time that we see the word Christian is used, and it's to say that the disciples then were given a new name. It says, and when he found him, he brought him to the Antioch, and for an entire year they met with the church and taught considerable numbers, and the disciples were first called Christians in Antioch. Now, before I go any further, I submit to you that that passage is saying more than your English translations reveal. And I don't know why the English translations did this. There's a common word for called, and it's used throughout the scriptures, and it's used a bunch of times. This particular one isn't. It's not used a ton of times. But every other time that it is used, they translate it differently. And they infer there's more to it. For example, in Acts chapter 10, this same term is used in regards to Cornelius. In Acts chapter 10 and verse 22, they said, Cornelius, a centurion, a righteous and God-fearing man, well spoken by the entire nation of the Jews, was divinely directed by a holy angel to send for you to come to his house and hear a message from you. That word directed, that's the same word. They were called. Cornelius was called to go get Peter. But the New American Standard says, adds in that in italics, divinely. And what they mean is the language infers divinely. Why? Because of the particular Greek word that's used. And every other time that word is used, it makes reference to the fact that it is a divine, a spiritual, a holy calling. Now think about if our translators had done that in Acts 11:26. And the disciples were first divinely called Christians in Antioch. Changes everything. It's not just like the disciples said, you know, I'm kind of tired of the name disciples. There's a lot of disciples. You have disciples of John and disciples of the Pharisees and disciples of, we need a new name, and they came up with the name Christian. Instead, it seems, by the word that Luke has chosen to use, that God has chosen to call them Christians. And this is, I believe, a fulfillment of prophecy in Isaiah 62 and verse 2. It says, the nations will see your righteousness and all kings your glory, and you will be called by a new name which the mouth of the Lord will designate. And I'm pretty certain that's fulfilled in Acts 11 and verse 26. Christian is a special term. And I'm not at all saying we shouldn't call ourselves Christians, but all Christians are disciples. The disciples were called Christians. So it's just a change of terms. And it has its own meaning, and we could do our own study on Christians. I mean, it's used three times. Every preacher's ears perks up, says, three times? That's a sermon. And it actually is. But we're not going to go into that. What I want to talk about then is being a disciple of Jesus. And I want to look at six passages about being a disciple, and then I want to get to the heart of the message, what it's really all about and why this, how this impacts who we are. But first, let's talk about what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. Because you can be a disciple of a lot of things. I'll give you an illustration in a second if I remember. But Luke chapter 14, Jesus gives a very difficult passage. And what he's doing is he's talking to a group of people that are following him. And he's saying, all right, you guys have followed me to this place. If you want to follow me, if you want to really follow me, if you want to be a disciple, here's what it's going to take. So in verse 25, it says, now large crowds were going along with him, and he turned and said to them, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Down in verse 33, so then none of you can be my disciple who does not give up all his own possessions. Now, you don't have to hate your family every time you choose to be a disciple. For example, let us suppose that we decided to be a disciple of the fictional character created by Sesame Street, Cookie Monster. You do not have to hate your family to be a Cookie Monster disciple. You don't have to give up everything you have. You have a joyous life to be a Cookie Monster disciple. What it means is, it is breakfast time. I will have cookies. It's lunchtime. I will have cookies. You're a disciple of the Cookie Monster. That's all it takes. But to be a disciple of Jesus, that takes more. And Jesus is saying here, all right, you're all following me. If you want to really follow me, you have to hate your family. You have to give up everything. Now, that was not a popular statement. That was not an easy statement. And Jesus is not saying that you have to despise your family in the bottom of your heart. You have to look at them and just hate them. Any more than he's saying you need to be suicidal. Because did he not in the same breath say, and you must hate your own life? What he is saying is, if you want to follow Jesus, he has to be above anything and everything. And if family gets in the way, you set them aside and you follow Jesus. And if your possessions get in the way, you set them aside and you follow Jesus. And if it must be that you give up your life, then you give up your life to follow Jesus. If you want to follow me, you have to do that. Now, not everybody has had to hate their family. Some have. Some have had to turn their back on their families. Because perhaps their families are not Christians. I baptized a young girl and she said, I don't know if I can go home. My parents have rejected me if I do this, and I did it. I bet you're not surprised she's still a Christian. She makes a decision like that. She's decided, I'm going to follow Jesus no matter what. She had to set aside her family. Some people, it's because they become a Christian and they come to realize that Jesus teaches about family. And he teaches, you're not allowed to be married to just anybody. Hardest thing, I think, the Scriptures teaches. Hardest thing is that you might be married to somebody and love them tremendously, but they belong to someone else. And if you're going to follow Jesus, you have to make that decision. I'm going to do this. Now again, you may not have to give up your family. You may not have to give up all of your possessions. You may not have to give up your life, but you have to be willing to if you're going to follow Jesus. So Jesus is saying it's going to be hard. It's not easy. Now another passage on this subject, and I'm not caught up with this. Sorry about that. The next passage I want to look at is Matthew chapter 10. In Matthew chapter 10, verses 24 through 25, a disciple is not above his teacher, nor a slave above his master. It is enough for the disciple that he become like his teacher and the slave like his master. If they have called the head of the house Beelzebul, how much more will they malign the members of his household? So to be a disciple means that we're going to declare Jesus to be our teacher, which means we must realize we don't know everything. We have to realize he knows what we don't know. And we're going to sit down and we're going to listen and not argue. He tells us something is the truth, we're going to say, no, I don't think so. That's not a disciple. A disciple sits at the feet and says, teach me everything, and absorbs it. And has this goal, did you notice, it has this goal to be like the master. And it is enough for the disciple that he become like his teacher and the slave like his master. And then we recognize and we expect, I'm going to be treated like him, which has its significance when we choose to follow Jesus who was crucified. When we choose to be a disciple, we are saying, I expect to become like him and to be treated like him and to learn the things that he has to teach. And then in Luke chapter 6 and verse 40, it's a pretty similar passage. In fact, it was read this morning in the reading by coincidence. It's a different word. It's the same Greek word. It's translated in verse 40, a pupil. That's a disciple. A pupil is not above his teacher, but everyone, after he has been fully trained, will be like his teacher. Really important passage in this context, because what it just taught us is you don't have to be like Jesus to be a follower of Jesus. In fact, you're not going to be. The whole point is, I want to become like that. And so every disciple is a work in progress. Every disciple is starting at some point and saying, I want to become like Jesus. And they are on a journey constantly getting to be more and more like him. Now, the other three passages, they all occur in the book of John. And John has several things to tell us about being a disciple of Jesus. And so in John chapter 8 and verse 31, Jesus said, so he was saying to those Jews who had believed him, if you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. So here's these Jews, and he's saying, you want to be my disciple, you got to choose to listen to me and my word, not the traditions of the Pharisees, not the things you've always held to be true. You need to focus only on my word. And then in John chapter 13, on the night in which Jesus is betrayed, he has sat down, he has washed the disciples' feet, and he is explaining to them, here's what it takes, here's what it means to be my disciple and for the world to know you're my disciples. In verse 34, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. And so here he is saying, to be a disciple of Jesus, you have to have love. But it's not really about the love. That's just coincidental. It's about being like Jesus. See, if you want to be my disciple, if you want the world to think you're my follower, you need to be like me, and here's who I am. I am one who loves, and so you need to love even as I have loved. Would anybody be so arrogant as to say, yeah, check, I've done that. Oh, but Tuesday, around 2 o'clock, I finally achieved it. I have loved as Jesus loved. I have reached that goal. Would anybody say that? No, brothers and sisters, we're a work in progress. That's our goal. That's our target. We're a little bit like art students. We become art students at a very, very young age. About as soon as we can do this, we get a hold of a crayon, and what do? We scribble. And we take that page away, and we scribble another page, and now we are an art student. But at some point, something happens to kids, and they stop scribbling, and they say, I'm going to draw something. And so then they put together these lines, and they have four legs that are all different sizes, a body that is impossibly round or oblong or whatever, and then you have another ball put on top of that, and it has whiskers, a tail, and pointy ears. And you know exactly what it is, don't you? It's a cat. Pointy ears is the dead giveaway. They've drawn a cat. Is it a cat? No. No, that's not what cats look like. But you were able to look at it and identify it. Now, as they grow as an artist, as they get more education and more experience and they keep working at it, and now you'd ask them to draw a cat, and they will put the tail on and they'll have little spikes on the end because it has fur, and they're going to have four legs that are the same size because it turns out cats are like that. And then they're going to have the eyes and the nose, and you're going to look at it and you're going to say, that's a cat. Is it a cat? No. Is it a cat? Yes. You can look at it and you can instantly say, that's a cat. Is it a perfect representation of a cat? No. But it's so much better. Which one is a cat? The drawing from the kid or the drawing from the college student who's drawing one? They're both cats. Which one's the disciple? The one who's just a scribble of life but has started to show resemblances to Jesus? Or the one whose life is mature and you can see Jesus with tremendous clarity? They both are. They're both disciples. A disciple is somebody who is a work in progress, who has said, Jesus is my goal, and now they start working towards it. And we may be nothing more than scribbles of a religious crayon to start off. But we're going to get there. That's what a disciple is. And now in John chapter 15 and verse 8, what Jesus says is, he says, my Father is glorified by this, that you bear much fruit and so prove to be my disciples. If we're going to be the disciples of Jesus, it's not going to be enough for us to say it, to wish it. We have to prove it. We have to dedicate our lives to bearing a lot of fruit, to doing a lot of things that are good for God to prove we're his disciples. Now, those are the six passages I wanted to point out so you can better understand this concept of a disciple. Now, let me show you what it means then when we're a disciple. When we put all this together, what does it accomplish? And what it means is you will not quit. That's really it. When you're a disciple, you're not going to quit. So consider, even when everything's falling apart around you, you're not going to quit. And I put up here Acts chapter 5. We should start in Acts chapter 3. You know, the book of Acts is not just about the spread of Christianity. It is about the spread of Christianity in the face of every obstacle that could be thrown at it. And every time they faced an obstacle, whether it was external or government or internal or even from God, there is a statement of the state of the union, the state of the church, and that is, it kept growing. That's really what the book of Acts is saying. It's saying, okay, here's the challenge they faced. They kept growing. They didn't quit. So in Acts chapter 3 and chapter 4, it's the disciples, the apostles being arrested. And imagine that your elders, somebody came in here in 5 minutes and arrested your elders. Would you come back and worship tomorrow night? Would you come back next week? And the answer is, if you're a disciple, yes, you would. Yes, you would. Acts chapter 5. In Acts chapter 5, verses 1 through 2, it's God. Not 1 through 2, 1 through the first section of chapter 5. But it is God striking down members of the church. Would you come back and work? If while we were sitting in here, I'm not talking about somebody just falling over. There is lightning that tears through the roof and strikes two of you. I'm not going to pick two of you. Going to show which two, but two of you just fall over from the power of God, would you come back the next week? And the answer is, if you're a disciple, yes, you would. Whatever persecutions they faced, they kept coming back. And the reason why is because they were disciples. In Acts chapter 8, the persecution becomes more widespread. Stephen has died, and he's not one of the apostles. And then Saul is now going after everybody. It says, Saul was in hearty agreement with putting him to death, and on that day a great persecution began against the church in Jerusalem. And they were all scattered throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria except the apostles. Some devout men buried Stephen and made loud lamentation over him, but Saul began ravaging the church, entering house after house and dragging off men and women. He would put them in prison. Therefore, those who had been scattered went about preaching the word. Did you notice? Here the persecution now gets personal. It's every single one of you. Every single one of them. And they didn't quit. They didn't say, oh, well, that's not going to work. Why would they go and still be Christians? Why would they go and tell others about it? It's because they're a disciple. It means that we won't quit even when other disciples misbehave. I don't know how many times I've heard people quit being a Christian because of the way Christians behave. Let me tell you, you didn't understand what it was all about to begin with. You didn't understand discipleship. Because look what happened. In Matthew chapter 15, verse 23, I'm amazed at the examples that we have. Matthew 15 and verse 23, there's this woman. She has a daughter who is demon-possessed. Can you feel sympathy for her? You parents, can you understand how much you would do to try to save your daughter from a demon? Well, she comes, and she's crying out, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is cruelly demon-possessed." But he did not answer her a word, and his disciples came and implored him, saying, "Send her away because she keeps shouting at us. Make her go away." Or how about in Matthew 19 and verse 13? Here's Jesus, and all these parents are bringing their children to him to be blessed by him. Now, you parents, can you relate to that? If you could have Jesus say, "May your life be great," to bless your child, and you know he's the Son of God, I would go pretty far to do that. What a blessing. Then some children were brought to him so that he might lay his hands on them and pray, and the disciples rebuked them. The disciples rebuked them. And there are other passages, other times, where the disciples are there saying, "Would you be quiet? Would you go away?" Could you imagine if there was people coming in the front door and we said, "No, not you, you get out." That's how they were behaving. Now, why would you keep following Jesus? Because they were disciples. They understood the concept. I'm going to explain it here in a little bit. Hopefully we're getting the picture. Acts chapter 6 and verse 1, it's where the church was taking care of their widows. But there were some widows who were from far away, and the disciples did not let them have food. They were being neglected. Why still be a member of a church when they are neglecting some of the widows? Because you're disciples of Jesus. Or Acts chapter 10 and verse 10 through 11, and you have Cornelius is baptized, and Peter is coming to Jerusalem, and they're saying, "What on earth are you doing? You can't be saving Gentiles." Can you imagine? That's how they were behaving. Or Galatians 2, verses 11 through 14, where Peter, in hypocrisy, decides not to eat with some. Imagine if Adam comes and he says, "This section right here, I'm not going to eat with you guys." How many of you, are you guys still going to come to church? You still going to worship? When the preacher has said, "No," sneers whenever he looks at you? But that's what Peter, the apostle, is now doing. And yet the church kept growing. And the people didn't quit. They kept going. They kept believing. They kept following because they were disciples. And it means that even when the teaching that we receive is different than what we expect, different than what we want, we're still going to follow. This is what's happening in Acts chapter 10. In order to get Peter to go over and to convert Cornelius, Peter is in this upper room and he has this vision. Acts chapter 10 and verse 10, he became hungry and was desiring to eat, but while they were making preparations, he fell into a trance. And he saw the sky opened up and an object like a great sheet coming down, lowered by four corners to the ground. And there were in it all kinds of four-footed animals, four-footed animals and crawling creatures of the earth and birds of the air. A voice came to him, "Get up, Peter, kill and eat." And Peter said, "By no means, Lord, for I have never eaten anything unholy and unclean." Now, Peter has just said, "No, all of my life I refuse to do this. It is a part of my religion and my faith. I will not do it." Then God takes it up, puts it right back down in front of him, says, "Do it." He says, "No." Now, understand, God knows. God knows what Peter has always done. God knows why Peter has always done it. But God right then is saying, "You better change." We got to be willing to change something we have always held. And then he later on understands, he's not talking about food, though it does relate to food. All food now is clean. But he's talking about Gentiles. what God has called clean no longer consider unclean. Peter would never have set foot in a Gentile's home, but now he will. Why? Because he's a disciple of Jesus. And sometimes we get hard doctrines. The passages that are up here, Acts chapter 11, that's the aftermath. How dare you convert the Gentiles? Now they have to change. Or Acts chapter 15, the same subject comes up again. The church is dealing with, do you have to be circumcised in order to be saved? And they had to be willing to change to this doctrine they were holding so strongly to that some of them would go traveling teaching it and stand face to face, toe to toe with the Apostle Paul and say, you are wrong. And when Paul says, no, I'm not, and he says, there's no small argument, he is not saying, no, I'm not. They are arguing, and these people are so convinced that they are right, they argue back. And you know what they have to do? They have to change. Because it's not about what you've always believed. It's not what you hold strongly to. It's about whether you're a disciple or not. In John chapter 6, we see the people that weren't willing to. Jesus says some hard things in John chapter 6. Jesus looks out at this group of people that are following him, and he knows they're not following him for the right reason. He says, you guys are only following me for the food. And so he teaches them something hard. He says, my flesh is true food. My blood is true drink. And unless you eat, unless you drink, you cannot be saved. And they said, that's really difficult. And Jesus does not respond when they say that's really difficult to say, oh, let me make it simple. Let me explain what I really meant. He does not simplify it. He does not make it easier because that's not how it works. It's about, do you accept me as the teacher or not? And when he doesn't make it simpler, what they do then is they go away. Verse 60, therefore many of his disciples, when they heard this, said, this is a difficult statement. Who can listen to it? But Jesus, conscious that his disciples grumbled at this, said to them, does this cause you to stumble? What then if you see the Son of Man ascending to where he was before? He didn't make it easier. He said, it's going to get harder. And these people, in verse 66, it says, as a result of this, many of his disciples withdrew and were not walking with him anymore. They're no longer disciples because they say he can't be the teacher anymore. And then what Jesus does is he turns to the 12. He says, you do not want to go away also, do you? Peter does not say, oh no, Jesus, we understood. He doesn't say, we got it. We accept it. We like it. That's not it. Here's why they still follow, even in the face of just as challenging of a doctrine for them as it was for the guys that just walked away. Lord, to whom shall we go? You have words of eternal life. We have believed and have come to know that you are the Holy One of God. And once you get that concept, he can teach you anything and you just have to accept it. He's the Holy One. He's got the words that save. And if you're a disciple, if you recognize he's the teacher, the master, you follow. So the reasons why disciples don't quit, I think you've got it. It's because, well, they're disciples. But what that means is this. They follow Jesus because he's still the Lord. So we've really talked about this idea of persecution, misbehaving disciples, and the idea of difficult doctrines. Which one of those will change who Jesus is? If somebody comes in and they arrest all of the elders, does that change who Jesus is? He is still Lord, so you still follow him. No matter how difficult it gets, you have to give up all of your possessions. It doesn't change who he is. And the reason we are disciples of him is because he is the Son of God. He is above all. He knows what we need to know. He is where we want to be. He is what we want to be. And so we will follow him because suffering doesn't change that. What if people misbehave? I know a young preacher. His first work, finds a job. He goes to a congregation. And what a mess he walked into. It was one of those churches that has a parsonage, you know, a little house on the side. The previous preacher was also an elder, and for years, nobody had walked into that house other than him. Now, this young preacher I know is moving in, and he finds out it's rat-infested, filled with mold, and on the brink of being condemned. And then they find out the preacher, this elder, had embezzled $100,000 from the church. Do you come back next week? Yeah, we deal with misbehaving Christians. We don't follow them. We follow Jesus. And that doesn't change who Jesus is. No matter what I do, no matter what your elders do, no matter what anybody else does here, it doesn't change who Jesus is. And so even though we may dislike what these other people do, and the preacher was wrong for doing that, we follow him. You shouldn't follow me. We follow Jesus. And he hasn't changed, even when his disciples decide to disregard his example and disregard his teaching and reject him. He stays the same. We should stay on the same path towards him. Or if we are taught something that we don't like, it doesn't change who Jesus is. And we're faced with a choice. Will I accept this doctrine that I don't agree with, I don't like, I find distasteful? Or will I follow Jesus, who's the Son of God and taught me it's true? If you're a disciple, your choice is already made. I will follow him. So they follow Jesus because he's still the Lord. They follow Jesus because he set the exact same example. Did Jesus suffer? Yes. Did he quit? No. So you're a disciple of Jesus? What are you going to do when you suffer? Not quit. You're following the same example. Did Jesus suffer at the hands of people who claimed to be the people of God? Yes. What example did he set? He didn't quit. So we're a disciple of Jesus. Are we going to quit? No. It's part of being a disciple. Did Jesus face doctrines he didn't like? Now, that one's a little bit harder, but I'll tell you, he still does to some degree. In Matthew chapter 4, when Jesus is starving and Satan recommends he gets some bread, I'm pretty confident Jesus wanted bread. I think that was a pretty strong temptation. But he chose to follow God instead. Or how about what Jesus says in the garden when he's praying to God? Not my will, but yours be done. I don't blame Jesus for this at all. He didn't want to go on the cross. I mean, he did. He wanted to go on the cross for you and for me. He wanted to go on the cross for everything that it represents, for all that it would accomplish. But when it comes down to the shame and the pain, he wasn't exactly excited. He was troubled in heart and in spirit to the point of death, he says. But he still did it. And if we're saying he's our teacher, then yeah, there's some doctrine you don't like, something you don't particularly care for. He's the example. You still do it. Why? Well, because we still want to get where Jesus goes. That's the bottom line of discipleship, is you follow somebody because they're going someplace you want to go to. You want to get to someplace? Follow somebody who knows how to get there. And so to go back through our list, if you suffer, does that change the fact that you want to go to heaven? Because if you still want to go to heaven, you still follow Jesus. If the rest of the world, if all the Christians start misbehaving and every Christian in here treats you wrongly, do you still want to go to heaven? Then you still follow Jesus. And if every doctrine is one you can't stand, you don't like, it's against everything you've believed beforehand, do you still want to go to heaven? Then you still follow Jesus. And you overcome those obstacles. You see, if we understand what it means to be a real disciple, we will not quit. We will become what we need to become. We will get where we want to get. Some people fall away before they even fall away. I know that sounds weird. I realized this when I was reading an article not too long ago about this Mormon woman who explained to the world on the internet why she stopped being a Mormon. And it's because she went to a gay wedding, a homosexual wedding, and she said, the Mormons are wrong. You know, she went there and she saw, you know, it's so filled with love. These people are really happy. This isn't wrong. This is okay. And so she quit the church. But then she said she'd always had a problem with the church's stance. And I realized she has no clue what she's talking about. Now, I'm not a Mormon. I don't agree with the Mormons. But they get this one doctrine right. And this woman, though she went into Mormon churches and would have claimed to have been part of the Mormons, disagreed with what they taught. She was not a disciple of the Mormon church. She was rejecting it, doubting it, fighting against it. And all that happened was she finally realized she wasn't a member and she quit. And I know Christians like that. I know Christians who have their own views. This is the way it should be. This is what doctrine should be. I can't think that God would ever do this. And they have their own opinions and their own views, and they hold them ever so strongly, and it doesn't matter what the scriptures teach. It doesn't matter then whether they worship on Sunday morning and Sunday night and Wednesday. They are not disciples of Jesus. It doesn't matter if they say that they're Christians. They are not. They are fake. So if what we're doing is we are just looking for comfortable living, if we're just looking for pleasurable living, if we're just looking for the church that agrees with us, we're not disciples. And I have people come, what do you teach on this? And I say, it doesn't matter what I teach on this. What matters is what Jesus teaches on this. And you need to figure out what he teaches and follow that. But that's not what they want. What they want is to find a church that they agree with, that they like, that won't condemn them for this sin that they're committing. That's not a disciple of Jesus. That is this little guy. Fake. Worthless. Better not be us. We don't want to be that. We want to be those works in progress that are constantly getting closer to God. Better every day. And while I know that this week is different because, Lord willing, you'll be back tomorrow night and the night after that, normally we don't have that. Normally we leave from here and we have the week to go through. And I want us to be resolved to say, okay, this week, it doesn't matter who's watching me. I'm going to follow Jesus. It doesn't matter what it's going to cost me. I'm going to follow Jesus. I want to be a disciple of Jesus and not of doctrine or of men. There are people who don't use instrumental music because they don't like instrumental music. And there are people who don't use instrumental music because they're following what Jesus said, and it doesn't matter whether they like it or not. One of those is a disciple, and the other one's following their own desires, even though they're doing the exact same thing. So within this assembly, there could be all sorts of people that are here to follow Jesus, but there might be other people here simply because this is comfortable. This is what they're used to. This is what they like. That's not discipleship. Discipleship is it doesn't matter whether I'm used to it. It doesn't matter whether I'm comfortable with it. This is what Jesus teaches, and that's what I'll do. That's discipleship. Since we are disciples, whatever the world has to throw at us this week, let's overcome it. Whatever challenges and what from whatever source, let's overcome it. Because we still want to get to heaven. We want to follow Jesus' example. And this, brothers and sisters, this is our task. All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go, therefore, and make disciples. I'm not looking for people in the world that already agree with what the Bible teaches randomly, as it happens. I'm not looking for people that just agree. I'm looking for people that will accept Jesus is Lord, Master, Son of God, and will submit to whatever he then teaches. It's not about us being similar to begin with. It's about a common faith. He's the master we follow. That's what we're trying to find. That's what we're trying to create. That's the task Jesus gave to you. Brothers and sisters, let's accomplish it. Let's go out there and make disciples, and in the process, let us be disciples. Thank you for your attention. I think I went long. I have no idea. I can't tell time. I should have mentioned that before. If there are any here who are not Christians, we encourage you to become one, to say, okay, you don't need to know everything, but if you recognize Jesus as the Son of God, was resurrected from the dead, he's going to get me to heaven. You know enough. If you believe that, repent of your sins. You may not even know what all of them are, but say, I'm going to change whatever he tells me to change and dedicate yourself to him. Repent. Confess, be baptized, and you'll be a disciple. Maybe just a scribble, but you will be a disciple, and we'll work together towards heaven. If you're a Christian and you have fallen away, I beg you, won't you come back? why don't you come back to the Lord as we stand and as we sing.